Welcome to the program for June 18th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In this hour, a conversation about human capital management at your agency. Pretty much every management resource that you read says leaders have a different skill set than technical experts. Pretty much every observer of human capital in the federal government says agencies choose new leaders by simply promoting technical experts. My guests today have talked about and written about and actually lived this issue, and it's the topic of our conversation today. Both Jeff Neal and Ron Sanders have long careers in the federal government as human capital leaders. Jeff Neal's last federal job was as Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department. He is now Senior Vice President at ICF International. Ron Sanders' last federal position was Chief Human Capital Officer for the Intelligence Community as it merged under the umbrella of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. He's now Senior Executive Advisor at Booz Allen Hamilton. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here today. It's great to see both of you again. I appreciate you being on the program today. Yeah,
thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Happy to do it. Let's start with you, Jeff Neal. The idea that I mentioned in the open, that technical experts are typically promoted to leadership positions in government. What's your view of that? What's your experience of that at the agencies that you worked at?
Well, I think it's true. And I think it's important when we talk about this and talk about supervision that what people are doing is promoting people for the most part based on technical abilities. It doesn't mean they're promoting bad people. It means they're promoting some of their very best people who've been the most successful. And it's actually a lot easier to observe technical behavior, technical performance, than it is to observe leadership performance. And so what people do is when they're looking at it, filling particularly a first-level supervisory position, they look around the organization, say, who's been really successful? Who really gets the job done? And those are the folks they tend to promote into leadership positions. That would be okay if they then immediately started developing the leadership skills in those employees. So recognize that you promoted them for one reason. You're putting them into a different job with a different skill set. If everyone then started immediately developing those leaders, then that would be okay probably. Not the optimum solution, but it would be okay. But most agencies tend not to do that. They'll put someone in a leadership position based on technical skills. They will let them flounder around for a while. The person will struggle sometimes. And then if the person doesn't work out, they say, well, where did Betty Lou go wrong? She was so good. And I always say that where Betty Lou went wrong was when going to work for an agency that wouldn't invest in its leaders.
Ron Sanders, you're writing about this on federalnewsradio.com. Your piece is titled Closing the Leadership Deficit, and it's posted on the in-depth page. You get at the heart of the issues that Jeff just talked about, and this concept is not limited to the federal government. We talked about that before we went on the air. This is something that happens all across industry. It happens all across academia and so on. This is a nut that seems to be tough for everybody to crack. Is that fair to say?
More than fair. This is not unique to the federal government, but there are some sort of artifacts in the federal government that make it a bit more challenging. Any sort of technically oriented organization, public or private, tends to look first to its best technical people as a source of for managers and ultimately leaders. But I'll make a distinction there. It's not just taking a technical person and making him or her a leader. They also have to make him or her a manager. Being a good manager is a necessary but not sufficient skill set. And then they have to figure out how to teach them to engage and inspire and collaborate, those really, really squishy leadership competencies that every organization depends on for its success. That's especially important in times of crisis. I don't think anyone would deny that we are in a crisis in the federal government. And dealing with that crisis with that leadership deficit is problematic. And while it's a public and private sector challenge, you have things like the decades-old general schedule that make it even harder for federal agencies to identify leadership talent, promote it, and at the same time continue to value and leverage technical talent. The general schedule system pretty much makes us choose the fork in the road. You can only get so far as a super technician. Eventually, you've got to be a manager and a leader, whether you want to be or whether you have the skills for it or not. And I hope that's something we spend some time talking about because it needs fixing.
Yeah, that's actually where I wanted to go first in this conversation, Jeff, because you kind of alluded to that a little bit with a word that you used, the word supervision. And that in my mind, gets to the whole idea that management and leadership are two separate concepts. There are a lot of managers who are not great leaders. There are a lot of great leaders who aren't necessarily management. There may be some of the super technical type people that Ron alluded to. So we actually, it strikes me, have potentially two different trains of thought that we can pursue, the one that Ron just suggested, and the idea of management versus leadership. Maybe there are some managers that don't need to be great leaders. They just need to be able to supervise a group of technical experts. Is that a reasonable thing, or
it's reasonable to a point. I think if you look at leadership and management, they are in fact different. Management is looking at the dollars. It's looking at the schedule. It's getting tasks accomplished. Leadership is knowing where an organization should go. It's having some vision for the future. It's being able to think of policy in a much deeper way, where you look at the long-term implications of what you're doing. Those are things that leaders do. And there may be some supervisory positions where strong leadership isn't absolutely positively essential. But I can't think of very many of them, because the leadership aspects of what you do are what make or break an organization. If you want employees to be motivated, good management is a threshold requirement. You have to have that. But good leadership is what really motivates people. It's what really changes organizations. It's to me, it's the most essential thing in an organization, and it's often lacking.
And we,
Francis, I think while leadership and management are different, there is the danger of a false dichotomy. Mm-hmm. Because I agree with Jeff. While the leadership component of a first-level supervisory job may be less than for a senior executive or an agency head, it is still there and it mm-hmm. is still critical. There's not a single thing we're facing at the front line in the federal workplace that doesn't require leadership. And we know that this newest generation of federal employees is demanding it. We know, we've done studies, Booz Allen and the Partnership for Public Service looked at federal retention and attrition last year, and this is, we showed empirically what I think Jeff and I and others have known for a long time. The go or stay decision for a young employee depends on that first level supervisor. And it's not how well that first level supervisor plans and organizes and directs the management skills. It's how well that first level supervisor engages and inspires. Their maneuvering room to do that may be more limited. They may have narrow discretion in their program area. Employees still look to them for that connection to the agency's mission. So again, I think while it's helpful to describe management and leadership as two, let's call them complementary sets of competencies, in today's federal workplace, I don't think you can afford to say we have some who manage and others who lead. Everybody has to do both, and that makes the challenge that much more difficult.
Based on what you're talking about in that survey, and by the way, that leadership vision beat pay, if I recall correctly. That was more important to people than right. than the dollar figure on the paycheck every couple of weeks. They wanted to understand that the people that they were answering to really understood where they were all supposed to go as a unit, which fascinated me because of how wound up we get in the whole pay debate, public versus private sector, and overpaid and underpaid and benefits too much. And all of that stuff, what I took away from that study, Ron, was all of that stuff is nice, but if I'm working for somebody that I don't buy into how they're managing, running this organization, leading this organization, none of that really matters that much anyway.
Again, there's another old adage that gray beards like Jeff and I live by, and that is that an effective leader can make almost any system work.
Right.
You can still accomplish the mission. You can have the best system in the world, and with lousy leaders, it's going to suboptimize. So again, you need effective leaders at the front line all the way to the executive suite. But those leaders are not easy to develop, And as we've discussed here, your candidate pool may very well come from your best technicians. There are ways, however, to assess leadership potential, leadership readiness amongst your technicians. In fact, there are lots of ways to demonstrate technical leadership. But once you have identified the potential, you really do have to make the business case for leadership development so that you can nurture that potential. Another old saw, you can learn leadership. It's hard to teach it. That means taking technical people, giving them the chance to lead in relatively low-risk sorts of settings so that they can figure out whether they're good at it and whether they like it, and the agency can do the same. And then to target the limited leadership development dollars that agencies have to those that get that gleam in their eye when they're put in front of a group and asked to take them up the hill.
That's the meat of the conversation. I want to get to that when we come back. In the wonder, one of the wonders of the internet age is that we can prove by putting a picture on the web that the only person in the room who really is a great beard is Ron. That you don't have gray in your beard yet, Jeff. So
I could say something about hair altogether, but I won't, Francis.
Well, you do have the best hair in the room, Ron. I'll give you credit for that. My guests are Ron Sanders and Jeff Neal, human capital leaders in the federal government. Ron Sanders now with Booz Allen, Jeff Neal with ICF International. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Here in the metro area, you'll find interesting people, top-notch restaurants, great sports teams, and plenty of monuments and museums. And here is where you'll find your next career, as a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. A career in the U.S. Coast Guard offers you stability, excellent federal benefits, and a flexible work schedule. So if you're looking for that next opportunity, consider the U.S. Coast Guard, where your career is how you serve. To find out more, visit the United States Coast Guard website at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
Jerry Reynolds, Manager IT Operations at USPS, commented during the panel discussion, protecting and securing your data in a virtual world.
We've taken progressive steps. We went through the mainframe. We went through the Sun. Now we're virtualizing on the x86 platform. And for us, to your point about server virtualization, I think we're currently at about an 8-to-1 ratio, and we're driving to almost a 40-to-1 ratio with some of the new bigger hardware that's coming up.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword virtual.
The right virtualization strategy can take you from static infrastructure silos to an automated high-density cloud that transforms IT service delivery. And the path goes straight through business-critical virtualization. Symantec has the backup, recovery, and security solutions you need to protect your virtualized environment with confidence. For the top 10 tips on protecting a virtualized environment, visit www.virtualbackupplan.com. Symantec, confidence in a connected world.
Central Michigan University has 7 centers right here in Metro D.C. Surprised? CMU has been educating Metro D.C. professionals since 1975, offering accredited adult-friendly degree programs designed for working professionals.
I feel so much better prepared now that I have this degree, and I feel that there is nothing that I cannot tackle.
Stay competitive with a quality degree from Central Michigan University in Metro D.C. Choose from degrees applicable to careers in administration, public sector leadership, healthcare, human resources, and more. Classes are forming now at our 7 Metro DC centers, including our new Alexandria Center. Go to cmich.edu/metroDC. That's cmich.edu/metroDC for more information. Or call 877-679-1268. Central Michigan University in Metro DC. Quality degrees, convenient formats, 7 local centers, certified operate by Chev.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Tuesday's Federal Drive. You've seen inspiring images of amputee veterans competing in sports. We'll talk to the man at Walter Reed who's behind the long and difficult rehab work that lets wounded warriors lead fuller lives. And it seems like such a little thing, DUNS numbers for contractors, but the GSA might be shelling out millions to a monopoly on contractor information. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on the program today, Ron Sanders of Booz Allen and Jeff Neal of ICF International, talking about leadership and management and technical expertise in the federal government, grooming the next generation of leaders in the environment in which we live today in the federal government. The reason that this originally came onto my radar screen was an interview I did 2 or 3 years ago with a man named Marcus Buckingham, and he's written any number of books on management, leadership, and so on. One of the things that he told me in this interview was that we, and when he said we, he meant people in general, not specifically the federal government, but he said we spend too much time encouraging people to get better at the things at which they're not very good, and not enough time at getting better at the things at which they are already fairly proficient. He gave me the example. I could spend, this is Mr. Buckingham saying, I could spend a lot of time perfecting my three-point jump shot, but I will still only ever be mediocre. I will never be very good. I certainly will never be very good and good enough to make money at it. And his point was that by focusing on the things at which he was good, at writing and speaking and lecturing and so forth, he could be much more effective just in the world at large. It strikes me that there's a microcosm of that in the federal government, and I wonder where each of you come down on that. Jeff, we'll start with you.
Well, I think he's absolutely right that if you look at the typical human being, we all have talents and abilities, and those talents and abilities vary from person to person. If you ask me to learn how to do something better that I do well, I start out with a leg up. I start out with some natural ability, and I'm much more likely to actually be able to get really good at it. Ask me to learn how to play a guitar, since I have no musical talent at all, and I will never be a good guitar player. I will learn the basics, and I will be a mediocre guitar player.
One of the fears that I see in that equation too, Ron, is by taking someone who is technically very proficient, moving them into a leadership role, if that's not necessarily something that is up their alley, you lose the technical expertise too, because you have somebody now who is particularly proficient in a certain area and can't really do that much of that anymore because he or she is overseeing the execution of whatever that technical expertise is.
That's an excellent point. I can't tell you how many examples from just my several previous lives. You take an IRS tax auditor who is worth his or her weight in gold, literally. And here's where the general schedule, I think, forces a Hobson's choice. Now, I think it's partly a choice you can work around, but the conventional wisdom, not far from the truth, is that your best technicians can only progress so far. And in order to be promoted, in order to be rewarded, they have to become managers, first level, second level, eventually an executive. And that's the default option for the general schedule. There are workarounds, legal workarounds, I'll emphasize, that still let you promote technical excellence and avoid the choice, both on the part of the employee and on the part of the agency, to take someone out of something that he or she loves and he or she may be among the best in the world at, and then force them to do something that they may not be comfortable doing in order to reward them. So I think we have to look at this at least in part systematically to encourage Chicos and HR offices to get to the edge of the general schedule, use the flexibilities that are in the system today to reward technical excellence and not force that Hobson's choice of manager or technician, either or, mutually exclusive. But obviously, the nature of work has changed since the last time our founding fathers looked at the general schedule. It would be really wonderful to look at retooling that as well so that you have a true dual career track. technical excellence up one track, managerial and leadership excellence up the other.
Jeff, you've had a lot of experience with this at DHS. I mean, you were CHCO there as they were continue to go through the melding process with 20 however many component agencies.
Yeah, DHS is still continuing to meld, and I think will probably continue to meld for quite a while. The general schedule system that Ron made reference to, I think, is a bit of a problem for the federal government. Keep in mind the general schedule system is about 60 years old, and when it was created, more than half of federal employees were GS-5 and below. And the GS system had at that time an 18 grade level range. The number of people in the so-called super grade, 16, 17, and 18, was very small. The number of people 5 and below was more than half of the workforce. There was ample room, ample bandwidth in the general schedule to be able to handle a lot of career options for people. You know, if you're a GS-5 and you wanted to consider making someone a 6 or a 7, you know, lots of range to do that. You could do a lot of things differently. Now, the general schedule is not fitting the government because it's designed for the government of 1950. And if you think about what's happened over the last 60 years, we have a different country. We have a different government. The lower grade level work mostly doesn't exist in government anymore. It's either been outsourced or it has been done away with because of technology. So we have a system that is very well designed to meet the needs of 1950. And it's so badly broken that I think it gets in the way of progress in a lot of different areas, not just in leader development.
Want to pursue that more when we come back from the break. My guests are Jeff Neal of ICF International and Ron Sanders of Booz Allen Hamilton on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
And now, on the home front, sponsored by your local Jeep dealers.
It's tough for any mom and dad who watches a child deploy into harm's way. One mother of a Marine whose son has been deployed twice says once your loved one leaves, the emotions and questions become so rampant that the basics seem to be lost in day-to-day living. So Kathy suggests thinking practical and having the mindset of the more information, the better. She suggests having a notebook nearby to write down any information your child relays from his or her new post, from the address to the superior's names to what they may want in their care packages. She says the more that's written down, the less jumbled your thoughts will be while you're trying to get a handle on the deployment. Another piece of advice, write down the things you want to tell your child. That way, when you get a surprise phone call, you can recall what you wanted to say.
Make tracks to your local Jeep vehicle dealer today and take advantage of an exciting military cash allowance on the full line of legendary Jeep vehicles. Jeep wants to express its extreme gratitude and pride for your military service.
Here is Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, from the panel discussion, The Federal IT Challenge. Where is the digital government strategy on the journey to the cloud? Brought to you by VMware.
The procurement rules and regulations have been optimized for the client-server era of 20 years ago. And that's great. I mean, it really did mature and add value along the way based on the way IT was procured and deployed in that model. We have a new model for IT now, and the federal procurement processes need to be updated to take advantage of the fact that it is really a transition from capital expenditure to the expense budget. And that offers or should offer considerable flexibilities, but a different set of controls and a different set of ways of evaluating the potential.
That's Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware Federal. And I'm Jason Miller.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Heather Rosen, who is a franchise consultant with FranNet, and she'll talk about what you should look for when you're looking to purchase a franchise. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pettleman, located in Fairfax, and visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Supporting family caregivers. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Providing care for a loved one with a serious long-term disease can take a toll on the family caregiver. At the National Institutes of Health's Clinical Center, NIH's research hospital, nurse and scientist Margaret Bevins sees how it affects people. In a journal article, Bevins described a wife providing care for her husband with cancer while she was caregiver for her mother and father. Bevins says family caregivers report feeling worried, fearful, sad, and angry. She says they may need to reach out for help.
Connect in advance with providers to bring the caregivers in to the discussions very early and have a support structure in place, understand where they can reach out, and encourage them to communicate.
Bevins' article was in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
Hey, man, what's that?
It's my new Pioneer DEH-44 HD radio car receiver that I just got from Walmart for $120.
HD radio? What's that?
It's your extra local HD to HD3 FM stations, but you need an HD radio receiver.
So I just need to buy an HD radio receiver?
Yeah, just visit HDradio.com for all the info. Then go to Walmart to buy your Pioneer DEH-44 HD radio receiver for only $120.
Okay, HDradio.com, then to Walmart.
HD radio, more radio, more value.
Back in In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today are Ron Sanders from Booz Allen Hamilton and Jeff Neal from ICF International, both of them with long careers in the federal government in human capital. And you can read what Ron is writing about the leadership deficit issue, closing the leadership deficit, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. During the break, we talked about an example. This scenario has played itself out over and over again, I'm sure, in the federal government. You have two candidates. Candidate A is a super technical expert, been at his or her job for a long period of time, very experienced, knows, understands his or her job, the mission of the agency, and so on, extremely, extremely well. Not necessarily quite as apt when it comes to leadership areas. Candidate B is a terrific potential leader, the kind of person people want to follow up the hill, as Ron used the term earlier. Maybe hasn't been on the job as long, or maybe does not have the depth of experience that candidate A does. Would it be fair for me to say that if that's the choice, 9 times out of 10, candidate A would get a promotion where candidate B would not? Is that a reasonable number?
Yes. Yeah, I think what happens is there is an aversion to risk that causes people to look at what is most visible. The actual technical performance is proven, and it's something that candidate A may use in a grievance or complaint if he or she is not selected. With candidate B, you're having to rely in part on assessments of potential. And potential can be viewed by a lot of folks as the thing you use to argue in favor of people who are not qualified, when in reality, in this case, candidate B is probably the better selection, because you really are looking at a leadership skill set, not at a technical skill set. But I think that is going to be one where more often than not, people will go with the easier selection. Doesn't mean it's the right thing, but it's what will happen more often than not.
But look, we ought not to scare people away from making the tough calls, and there are ways to assess not just leadership potential, but leadership skills, even among your technical people. I'd like to move us back up a step, because I'm still trying to figure out a way of either leveraging the general schedule system as it exists today. It was actually created before I was born. That's how old it is.
That's ancient.
That's ancient.
Wow. I had no idea.
It was written on cave walls. How you can reform the system, and Francis, I'll put in a plug. Booz Allen and the Partnership for Public Service have kicked off a 7 or 8 month long project to develop an implementable civil service reform blueprint that would get us there. But I think The current system can be leveraged so that you can promote super technical people and you don't force that Hobson's choice. At the same time, I think you can assess leadership skills, not through ethereal and esoteric tests. That's always dangerous. But, for example, one of the things that we started back when I was in the Internal Revenue Service, and I believe they still do this today, very effective, are management readiness programs that take people who may not know whether they'll like it or whether they're good at it and gives them the chance to actually practice and demonstrate those skills on the job so that it's real. It's not a test. It's not even a simulation, although I'm a fan of simulations because I think that is almost as good as real-life experience and real-life behavior to assess leadership potential. My belief is that as if people are given the chance to experience it, to demonstrate those skills, there'll be a certain amount of self-selection. The people who understand it and realize they're good at it will move on. They'll volunteer. They'll be more competitive. And frankly, the agency ought to target leadership development investments in those people. And others, the technical people, I think many of them will realize, not for me. If you can relieve the pressure to progress by providing for a technical track, you can further mitigate the challenge. But at the end of the day, and I hope we have a chance to talk a little bit more about this, the idea of being able to, through various means, assess your leaders and those who have the potential for it, and then target succession planning efforts on those who are demonstrating that readiness. I prefer to use the word readiness rather than potential, because I think potential gets you in potential trouble with the merit system. But readiness to progress to the next level, and if the next level is management, looking at the competencies required, looking at the individual's ability to demonstrate those competencies, measuring the gaps, and then undertaking development activities to close them, that's entirely in consonance with the merit system, with merit principles, and agencies just need to get on with doing it, because there's not enough leadership development money to develop everybody.
You know, in theory, I agree with you. In practice, let's say someone's a GS-12, and he or she is not leadership ready. So they're not demonstrating that readiness. And we say to them, we're going to invest a little more money in developing the person in the next cubicle because he or she is showing that readiness. How do you respond when that employee says, yeah, but that employee has had more opportunities than I have, and the fact that he or she is demonstrating that readiness is based on decisions you've made when you made assignments? You gave them the more interesting projects. You gave them the opportunities to develop those skills. You didn't give them to me. You're going to have to respond to at least some of those folks by saying, okay, maybe you're right, and we need to give you more opportunities to develop as well. So it's
well, see,
I don't know if the theory...
I'm talking about a conversation that has occurred after they've been given the opportunity to demonstrate. I do think it's problematic to say, Jeff, I really like you. I'm going to give you all these opportunities to stand in front of a group and lead a project, even though you're not a supervisor yet. And, Francis, I'm not going to do that for you. No, I believe in equal opportunity assessment. You both get a chance to demonstrate, and you ought to be able to observe behavior that says, Jeff, you just did it better. And I ought to be able to say to Francis, remember, I put you in charge of that project. I had you facilitate a group. I had you lead a team. And how did you feel it went? And odds are the individual is going to say, well, I stumbled a little bit. So, again, these are not easy conversations to have, but we shouldn't shy away from them because of that. I think agencies have to target their limited leadership development dollars, because after all, not everybody is going to be promoted to leadership. So why take the risk that you promote the wrong people, have them become leaders, have the agency hemorrhage talent, which these days is hard to replace, and then say, well, but at least we didn't get a complaint.
I guess the pitfall that I see in that argument, potentially, Ron, compared to what Jeff was talking about, is the idea that the way the manager sees the opportunities that have been presented and the way the employee sees the opportunities that have been presented may be two different things.
Very different.
And, yeah, and in the scenario that you painted, Jeff, I see a lot of opportunity in the federal government where employees know they have recourse any number of different ways for somebody to go, Well, this doesn't look equal to me, and so I can go make a fuss. The manager then says, well, this just isn't worth the hassle.
If you're rigorous about it, if you say, these are the competencies we expect of first-level supervisors, I'm going to give both of you the opportunity to demonstrate those competencies in situations that are analogous to management. You're going to lead a team, a group, a project. It's all yours, Jeff. And then observe the behaviors. Again, there's still judgment involved, but we can't be afraid to exercise judgment. I worry about the agency or the manager that does this based on gut.
Mm-hmm.
That is problematic. You can't say, well, I just think Jeff has the potential, Francis, and you don't. I'm not sure I can pin down exactly why I have that feeling. No, it has to be rigorous.
Rather than quantifiable,
I'd say observable.
Okay.
But we're talking about issues with quality of leadership, and the people who have to make these calls are leaders. And we've already said we agree that there are issues with the depth of leadership abilities across every kind of organization, both government and private. And now we're going to be saying we want people to make these kinds of calls. And bias is not always obvious. And what really is equitable is not always obvious. But if I'm given an opportunity to lead something, Ron's given the same opportunity. He succeeds wildly, and I don't do very well. And our manager comes along and says, well, you know, Ron really has demonstrated I gave you both the same opportunity. He succeeded, you didn't. And so I'm going to invest a little more in him. What if I didn't have the same caliber of team for my assignment that he did? You assigned somebody to me who had some significant problems. His team was a team of superstars. One of the other things that I think Ron and I have both experienced as leaders at senior levels in government, a lot of our success was based on the quality of the teams we led. Some of it was our doing, and a lot of it was the people that we were leading. They were the ones who actually did everything.
But, so Jeff, that's a slippery slope, because then you paint yourself into the corner of, that means I have to develop everybody, and if I don't have the money to develop everybody, or the best I can do is spread that peanut butter very thin, then that result is poor quality of leadership. I'll go back to the author you mentioned at the start of this segment. If you've got a bunch of A and B leadership competencies, it's easier to get you from the B to an A. Then you're going to be even more effective. If you've got a bunch of C and D competencies, it's really hard to get those C and D competencies up to A or B.
And when it's a C or D leader making that call, how do you know you're making the right call? I'm not saying you should develop everybody. I'm not saying you should try to put everybody in the federal government through a leader development program. I do think that programs that help people get a feel for what it's really like to be in a leadership role are really important, because a lot of people do self-select out once they see what's really involved in those types of positions. But I think if we're going to start weeding people out and separating wheat from the chaff, we need to make absolutely certain that once somebody is declared to be chaff, that we know for sure that they are. Otherwise, we could really be hurting somebody badly.
Let's pick up on that idea of self-selection when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests are Jeff Neal and Ron Sanders. You can read more about closing the leadership deficit at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
This is a transformative time for the Department of Defense. The military is progressing toward a smaller, nimbler force capable of rapidly responding to any threat around the globe. Secure, next-generation communications capabilities are essential, ensuring personnel can get the information they need from virtually any location, anytime, on any compatible device. Microsoft offers today's military leaders the next wave of technologies, providing advanced security features without compromising productivity and mission effectiveness, all at a price that makes sense. From the front line
lines to the command center to the Pentagon, Microsoft and its global partner network are working with defense leaders to create solutions that not only meet but anticipate today's service member needs. Whether it's providing secure online collaboration and editing capabilities or voice and video through unified communications, Microsoft is equipping warriors in motion with the familiar technology they use every day to get the job done. That's real impact for tomorrow's military. Learn more about defense IT solutions at Microsoft.com/DOD.
The Smithsonian Air and Space Museum's Lisa Young is one of a kind. She's the only person anywhere who can serve spacesuits for generations to come. In the latest installment of Federal News Radio's Cool Jobs in Government series, we ask Young what goes into the art of preserving spacesuits. Plus, how did she find herself in such a unique position? Watch Young in action and hear her describe the job in her own words. Find it now at federalnewsradio.com. Search Cool Jobs.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Ron Sanders of Booz Allen Hamilton and Jeff Neal of ICF International, talking about leadership development at federal agencies and the peculiarities of the federal system. One of the topics that we just talked about was self-selection. I want to get to that in a few minutes. But you both talked about the decision-making process and deciding who goes on the leadership track and who doesn't. You have some varying opinions about that. But I wonder, how far up should that decision be made? How far up the chain should somebody be looking, or how far down should they be looking at this? You both seem to agree it's not the first-level manager. Am I right about that?
Clearly the first-level manager should have input. I'm not sure it's a vertical question, Francis. I just know that having more disinterested observers look at somebody in a leadership capacity, again, we're talking about technicians who are given the opportunity to lead groups and projects, not once, but over the course of months and maybe even years, but having that part of a formal program where disinterested individuals observe the person, again, I think two things happen, and you touched on one to open this segment. One is that the more people experience it, the more they're better able to determine whether they're any good at it and whether they like it, because there are headaches associated with leading. I know that comes as a surprise. So I think there is some self-selection as they experience it. But I also think then you make better investment decisions, and that's what we're talking about here. You don't leave the investment decision to a single individual, the first-level supervisor, who may very well be too close to it. You leave the investment decision to a group of individuals who understand what the needs are, the competencies, the larger pipeline, et cetera. One of the other reports we did with the partnership, Booz Allen did with the partnership, had to do with succession planning in the federal government, where in part we debunked the myth that it's antithetical to the merit system. But GE developed something called the 9-box exercise, which helps identify leadership potential. We shied away from the word potential. We talked about readiness to move to the next level. But the system that report recommends involves lots of opportunities and lots of data points and lots of people doing the assessment, because, again, the investment is just too important. You want to minimize the risk of getting it wrong.
One of the things that we find in federal HR, and it's been a problem for quite a while, is the willingness to invest in things like this. If you go to the typical agency and tell them it's time to make a cut to their budget, one of the first things that will be cut is training. The programs that relate to people are generally on the chopping block before other programs. Most agencies, given the opportunity to cut employee programs or IT, will cut the employee programs before they'll cut the new system they want to buy. And so that means that getting people willing to invest the kind of dollars that it will take if you want to do really good assessments of people, if you want to give people the opportunity to show what they can do in leadership capacities, and then formally assess that in some structured way so it's not just the opinions of their first-level supervisor or their first- and second-level supervisor, that's going to be a tough sell. It's probably a sell worth making, but it's going to be a tough sell. The government is like many organizations, not always good at investing in its people, and particularly when it's for something that isn't the way most people who are in leadership positions got where they are. One of the biggest problems you run into when you start introducing something new is people will say, well, I didn't get here that way. Are you saying I'm not very good? Well, of course we're not saying you're not very good. You're wonderful. But getting folks to buy into something that's very, very different is a tough thing to do sometimes.
My guests are Ron Sanders and Jeff Neal, and we are talking about leadership development in the federal government. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is In Depth with Francis Rose.
Recently, UnitedHealthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. UnitedHealthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the seven leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune Magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are UnitedHealthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job. It's an honor. UnitedHealthcare.
The year was 1941. America was about to go to war. Rosie the Riveter had not yet become an icon. But one October morning, Marie Kalk and 18 other women walked into the new Glenn L. Martin airplane plant in Omaha looking for jobs. At about the same time, Bernice Olsen went to work at the Lockheed factory in Burbank. None of them thought they were going to make history, but they did, along with nearly a half million other women who joined the war effort. Because they were doing more than building workhorse aircraft like the B-26 Bomber and the B-38 Lightning. By answering their nation's call, Marie, Bernice, and the others blazed a trail that their daughters and granddaughters would one day follow, all the way to the top. Their story is our story. See it and others unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
I'm Kurt Krause, General Manager of the National Conference Center in Leesburg, Virginia. Recent overspending by the GSA has triggered drastic meeting and travel restrictions that are short-sighted. The fact is, most government departments spend sensibly. Training is critical for every organization's success, including the government and our military. These sweeping changes will negatively impact our industry and the economy. See my letter in the Washington Post advocating long-term solutions, not short-sighted reactions. And for responsible meeting options, visit conferencecenter.com.
Paid for by the National Conference Center.
The CIO Council's recently released digital government strategy goes beyond mobile technology to rethink the way federal agencies manage information and interact with citizens. The shared platform approach not only addresses data, application, and device management, but also how to mitigate the threat of security breaches. Join FC of Bethesda on June 20th at the Bethesda North Marriott for a discussion about how agencies transform this policy into action. Register at fcofbethesda.org/junebreakfast.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Jeff Neal of ICF International and Ron Sanders of Booz Allen Hamilton. And Ron, you made a pretty dramatic promise during the break. And since you've never lied to me yet, as in the time that we've known each other, I'm very impressed by this. You said you were going to give my audience thousands and thousands of dollars of consulting advice free of charge. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left, so maybe just give us $1,000 worth.
I don't charge that much per minute. But I do want to follow up with the point Jeff made at the end, or the danger that Jeff identified. And here's where the free advice comes in. To me, it is easy to say and likely true if you let it be that the first thing to get cut is training, and probably of your training budget, the first thing in the training budget to get cut is leadership development because the ROI is so uncertain and squishy. To me, the way to get around that, the way to defeat that sort of conventional wisdom, is to make sure your senior leaders own your leadership development pipeline. Not just the programs, they own the pipeline. They understand what the demographics look like, what the turnover is projected to be, what the competencies are. They ought to define the competencies, not HR. I think the Chicos that have survived a long time, and Jeff and I are among them, realize that if a leadership development program in particular is seen as an HR thing, it's at risk. If it's seen as a senior leader thing, it's not only going to survive, it's going to thrive because senior leaders, if you find ones that get it, and I'll speak for myself, I've been blessed to work with senior leaders who get it, Charles Rosati, Mike McConnell, people like that, then it's going to not just survive, it's going to thrive. They'll put money to it, and they'll make sure the leadership pipeline is healthy and robust.
Jeff Neal, I know it's hard to believe when you're in a room with Ron Sanders, but you get the last word. Thoughts about what we've talked about today?
I think this particular subject is incredibly important to the federal government and to any organization. Leaders affect employee engagement. They affect employee productivity. They affect employee health and welfare. Virtually every aspect of employment is related to how well your leader does his or her job. And so I think it's one of the most important things the federal government can invest in. And I'm really grateful that you invited Ron and I in here to talk about it today. I think it's a subject well worth talking about.
I would like to continue this conversation, actually, because I think I have a page full of notes here that we didn't have a chance to get to, and I would love to continue this conversation because I agree with you that it is important, and I hear managers all over the federal government telling me that they're struggling with how to deal with all of these kinds of issues when it comes to people.
It's a subject worth being passionate about. It's that important.
Well, we'll keep this conversation going then. We'll actually post our conversation from today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Ron Sanders' piece called Closing the Leadership Deficits, available for you to read whenever you want. And we'll keep you posted on when we're going to be able to have these gentlemen and other thinkers in the federal government talk about this with us on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hour number two of the program is coming in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.